From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour, starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Nandi. I have to start off by saying that if you heard the billboard before this broadcast, that story is not true. Metro is not shutting down three lines starting this afternoon. That was an April Fool's attempt at a joke, so please do not take it seriously. Tom Sherwood is not a big fan of April Fool's jokes at all.
I'm not. There's a certain mean spiritedness to too many April Fool's jokes, you know? It's just like when people say something joking, but they don't really, there's a substance, a kernel of truth to it. I've never been a big fan of April Fool's jokes.
Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter with NBC4 and a columnist with the current newspapers. Later in the broadcast, we'll be talking with Dan Boehling. He is a Democratic candidate for Maryland's 8th Congressional District. But right now, we're talking with LaRubie May. She is a D.C. council member representing Ward 8. So if you have questions or comments for LaRubie May, you can call us now at 800-433-8850. Go to our website, kojoshow.org. Watch the live video stream and ask a question or comment. Shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show or email to kojo@wamu.org. And LaRubie May got really taken this morning by an April Fool's joke by your niece and nephew, huh?
Yes, I did.
They got you good, almost gave you a heart attack?
Yes.
Are you also not a fan of April Fool's jokes?
Not that one.
Not that one.
You know, just briefly say what happened.
So my nephew calls me very, very early this morning and from my brother's phone, and I can't find my dad. I've knocked on his door. His sister is screaming in the background. They're like, can you help us? I'm like, did you call grandma? Did you call 911 and everything? And they're like, they're just panicking. I'm like, all right, just calm down. Calm down. And I was like, I'm going to put you on hold and we're going to call 911 and we're going to call grandma and stuff. And then my brother gets on the phone and he says, April Fool's Day.
By which time she'd already called 911 and the ambulance was on its way.
Yeah. So I told him last week, I was just telling someone, I have 6 brothers and sisters, and I said, you know, we're all too old to do April Fool's Day joke, but we're all so immature that we still do. And I told him that, you know, it wasn't funny.
And Tom Sherwood wants you to know that if anybody tells you today that Bernie Sanders will not be on the D.C. ballot in April in the District of Columbia primary, that is an April Fool's joke, because Tom Sherwood, you broke the story, he will be on the ballot.
Well, I broke the story that he was going to not be on the ballot unless the council takes action. You know,
yes.
Early this week, you know, the deadline was to be on the ballot. It turns out that a staff member for the Democratic Party failed to send in on time the list of presidential candidates, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and a unknown third person. The deadline was March 16th. The email to the Board of Elections went on March 17th. The Board of Elections is not empowered to change the rules, and so the council on Tuesday is going to have to pass a legislation, emergency legislation, that will make certain that Bernie Sanders' name is on the ballot. And I say to Councilmember LaRubie May, I don't know if you're supporting the presidential candidate yet, are you?
You know, I'm focused on June 14th and making sure that LaRubie May
that's
crosses.
Your own race,
yep,
yes.
That's my own race right now. That's where I'm focused.
But it did embarrass the city. I mean, we reported that. I tweeted it first, and then it just kind of blew up. It led to Drudge Report and all of that, because it looked like supporters of Hillary Clinton in the district were trying to sabotage Bernie Sanders and keep him off the ballot because someone had complained that his name had been submitted late, and no one complained that her name was submitted late. But it really was just a screw-up. Mm-hmm. Is that right? As you understand it, you'll be voting on...
Yeah, we'll be voting on Tuesday. And what it is that there was, as in all the times when someone submitted to be on the ballot, there's room for someone to contest. Right, and that's what happened.
But there is no doubt that the council will vote in the way.
Well, I don't think you don't predict what a council will do until it does it, you know.
Until after the vote, right?
I have to tell you, I learned that lesson some time ago when I went up to a council member and he had sponsored a piece of legislation. And I said, oh, you're going to vote for the legislation? He said, oh, no, sponsoring legislation doesn't mean you're going to vote for it. That just opens the subject to discussion. And so you cannot predict what any legislature, any place at any time will do until they do it. But they should, on Tuesday, clarify that Bernie Sanders will be on the June 14th.
I'll vote yes.
Okay.
Talk a little bit about what Maryland legislators are planning to do. They're going to invoke something known as the 6-day rule. so that if, in fact, the governor of Maryland vetoes legislation that they send to him, they will have time to override that veto, because apparently the rule says what?
Well, in the last 6 days, if the governor has, if he doesn't veto it, anything that passes in the last 6 days, it becomes law.
Yes.
Now, the governor today vetoed a significant transportation bill, and so that means the Maryland Assembly will have a chance to override it. But again, this isn't an example of how legislatures, whether it's the Congress or the D.C. Council or the Maryland or Virginia legislatures, they have a lot of rules and procedures and exceptions to do a lot of things that they want to do. And the majority Democrats in Maryland are pretty much messing with the Republican governor, as they have the right to do.
Our guest is LaRubie May, D.C. Council member representing Ward 8. Want to ask her a question, make a comment about her, to her? 800-433-8850. You may want to ask about whether or not there's likely to be legalized gambling in the district, because Tom Sherwood, according to reports here on WNU, a group funded by an anonymous corporation registered in Delaware is pushing to legalize gambling in the district, first by creating a site in downtown Anacostia where people could play poker, blackjack, and other card games, and then licensing other facilities throughout the city. What's going on here?
I'll tell you what's going on here. Nothing. This has about as much chance as back in the early 90s when Mayor Sharon Pratt Kelly suggested that the old convention center be turned into a London-style high-end, high-roller casino. It went nowhere, and we can hear from the council member on this, but this is the same couple of guys who, since the early 2000s, have had various proposals to bring some kind of gambling operation.
Shall I name them?
Well, if you want to, but I'm not sure they're worth it.
Okay. I won't.
Is that about right?
Yeah, that's about right. I mean, you know, the D.C. Code, Section 22-1701, is very clear that we prohibit gambling in the district. And if that were to change, we'd look to see that change happen in another part of the city before it happened in Ward 8.
Well, you know, we could have gambling there at Good Hope Road and Martin Luther King, and then we could have Wizards basketball and Mystics basketball out at Congress Heights.
It could
really be an economic development.
It's an understatement to say that LaRubie May is a supporter of that aforementioned proposed sports and entertainment arena slated for the St. Elizabeth's campus. She is an enthusiastic supporter of it, but some of your council colleagues want more transparency and they want a cap on the investment, since right now district taxpayers would be on the hook for any overruns beyond the $50 million that's set aside for it. You objected to that measure, putting a cap on any overruns. Why?
Well, first of all, I think it's a new way of looking at things. But let me be clear that myself nor any resident, any of the 40-plus Ward 8 residents who came to the hearing, we're not saying that we want mismanagement. We absolutely want accountability. We want a great product for our money. Well, we don't want a blank checkbook, but what we do understand is we don't want a closed checkbook, which is what's happened in Ward 8 for decades.
Why not ask Ted Leonsis to open up his checkbook? He owns the Washington Wizards. He's not exactly a poor man.
Well, I don't think that he's a poor man at all, and I think that if we were going to convey this land to Ted Leonsis and allow him to own it, as we've done other sports facilities in the city, it'd be a different conversation, but this will be a district asset. And, you know, we should be investing in Ward 8 at whatever level. And again, we're not saying just an open checkbook, right? I don't think that anyone is saying that. What we're saying is that if by chance we need to invest more than the $50 million or whatever into the project, that we'll evaluate that, we'll look at it, but that's okay, because again, what we need to do is, it's okay to overinvest in a community where you've underinvested for decades.
You say this investment in the community is bigger than basketball. What do you mean by that?
Well, so, you know, the conversation gets kind of, people get stuck on Ted Leonsis or the Wizards and the Mystics, and people really forget. I think one of the things people forget is that this project, the number of jobs that it will bring, and that previous administration, my predecessor, I think former Councilmember Edith Whittington went on record saying that, you know, she never had an opportunity to really bring life to the site of St. Elizabeth. And so this will be an opportunity where we're now gaining momentum of other people, other businesses, other retailers wanting to come to this site to bring some of the amenities, to bring some of the jobs, and very importantly, to bring industry to the campus of St. Elizabeth, where the residents of Ward 8 will be able to participate. And I think what's get lost in the conversation about bigger than basketball is, you know, we have St. Elizabeth Phase 1 that will happen, some of which will happen before, will happen before the entertainment sports arena. And so I just think that this isn't, you know, basketball obviously is the main reason.
Not if the Wizards and the Mystics keep playing like they are right now, but that's another
story. We should be clear. Alyssa Silverman proposed this cap on the $50 million, and several other council members, I think, joined with her.
Okay.
There was a hearing on March 23rd, or roughly around there. Jack Evans held the hearing. I'm not sure he really wanted to hold the hearing, but he did.
Mm-hmm.
And so the legislation has pretty much, at this moment, not moved from his committee. Okay. As I understand it, that if the council does not seek a disapproval resolution on this contract, it goes into effect on April the 7th, which is next Thursday. So this is could be somewhat of an academic exercise unless somebody actually takes action on Tuesday. Is that right?
Yes. And, you know, I had breakfast with Councilmember Silverman this morning, and so we're very comfortable with the contract.
Oh, now that's news. You had breakfast because there were some people who said that in your remarks at the hearing, and I did not go, so I can't, that there was some aspect of a racial concern that people from around the city, and let's say Silverman is not African-American, but that...
She's not?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not unless she has some news that I'm not aware of. But that there was the two people outside of it's a racial thing, don't block progress in this neighborhood where African-Americans have been held back for so long. Now, I know Alyssa Silverman, and I know that was not her intent. There's nothing in her life that suggests that it was, but I did hear that undercurrent in this discussion. Is that correct?
I think that, you know, Ward 8 is no surprise that we're the majority of residents that live in Ward 8 are African American, and the places where we've not done some of the similar actions in other parts of the city have been more affluent and predominantly white. And so, you know, there are some racial issues as it relates to the investment and resources that have happened in Ward 8 that we believe have happened because it's a community of black folk. But I agree. I don't think that Alyssa is a racist, and that there was racist intentions among in her legislation. But it is what it is. It was in a black community that's been underinvested.
So what happened at the breakfast this morning?
We had a good breakfast. So, you know,
where did you have breakfast?
We had breakfast at the IHOP on Alabama Avenue in Ward 8.
Okay.
To spend my money in Ward 8.
Good.
As much as.
And who asked for this breakfast?
So I reached out to the council member after the hearing to say, you know, on the dais, council member said she was willing to work with the Ward 8 council member on how we move forward. So I reached out and said, let's figure out how it is that we move forward. And so this morning was the first time that our schedule allowed for us to get together. And again, I have all the confidence in the world that the contract is going to move forward without a disapproval resolution.
She's not going to present the disapproval. Did she tell you she won't do the disapproval resolution on Tuesday?
Again,
or she indicated?
Again, I have every reason to believe that the contract will be deemed approved. I thought it was April 6th, but it could be April 7th, whenever the date is.
Close of business April 6th.
Well, we have Roger in Northwest.
Who paid for the check? Who did you split the check? Who paid the breakfast check?
You think we're not waiting for an answer?
Councilmember Silverman picked up the check.
Okay, okay. I hope she tipped properly.
Here's Roger.
So do I. It was a Ward 8 resident.
Tom, put on your headphones. Roger, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. I have more than one concern about the current issue. I want to see investment in Ward 8. I wish that this sports complex would go forward. But the bill says that it's not going to cap the budget at $50 million. It's going to cap the city's contribution from $23 million to not go over 50. So the current bill that Councilmember Silverman has in is going to give $27 million more to Events DC than they're asking for. So my wish is that we would have specific promises from Events DC that the jobs created by this project would go to Ward 8 residents, not to the whole city, and that the generous cap that's being proposed would be accepted.
That will be me.
So every project in Ward 8, not just the ESA project.
The ESA?
The Entertainment Sports Arena.
Okay,
the Wizards Facility, as it's more affectionately known. I'm very focused, and every agency in this government, every director knows that I'm extremely focused on making sure that any development, any government money that Ward 8 businesses and Ward 8 residents are the true beneficiaries of whatever happened. And so we'll make sure that Mr. Odell at Events DC and everyone that's involved in this project are really focused on making sure that Ward 8 is participating in this project from the top to the bottom.
The other major development you mentioned, the Department of Homeland Security moving to St. Elizabeth, this will be the largest federal construction project since the Pentagon was built. But what's the latest and what's the timeline?
So the short answer, Kudrow, is I don't know the timeline on that. But what we now know is there isn't really a timeline.
Yeah. It's more like it's a dotted line.
Gotcha. A moving timeline.
It's a dotted line going nowhere at this point.
Yeah, but I think that we have greater confidence in it happening now than we have had in the past. And I think, you know, quite frankly, I think that part of the issues that we've had in it moving forward is that there was some expectation that the East Campus and the West Campuses would move along simultaneously to give an opportunity for those on the West Campus to have those things that we want in the community on the East Side, the amenities, the stores, the cleaners, or whatever we need to be able to make sure that those individuals, those 11,000 additional people coming on the west side, would have some of the things that they need in the neighborhood, in the community. And I was just there at the Office of the Coast Guard this week. Had an opportunity to sit on a panel and talk with members of the Coast Guard, and they're pretty excited, and they're believing that's going to move forward, and so am I.
My only concern about that is if you drive up and down 295, you can see the Coast Guard headquarters building. It's a multi-tiered building that goes up the hill there on the west side of St. Elizabeth campus. It's a huge building. Mm-hmm. But they've also created roads at the bottom of the hill right off of 295 where you can go into the roadway and go into the facility and leave and never go anywhere near Martin Luther King. And my concern has always been that the people who come to that facility will go there and then get back on the freeway and go back to Virginia and Maryland and other parts of the city and never, ever see Martin Luther King. I haven't noticed any increase in business on Martin Luther King because how many people work at the Coast Guard?
About 3,000. Yeah.
I don't see any economic development from them or people walking on the streets there or not.
So I agree with you, right? But yeah. So part of that problem is we don't have anything on Martin Luther King for them to go to right now. That's part of the issue. But I think it's the Coast Guard, Commander Schaeffler, has been really fantastic.
He's been very enthusiastic in everything he has said.
Well, in his actions, I mean, we see the number of volunteerism that we're having from the Coast Guard really increase over in Ward 8. And so I think we're going to have to be diligent when the secretary, I think they're remodeling the building for the secretary right now. And we've just got to make sure that we stay focused on pushing those members of the community from the west side to the east side and building it and making it attractive for them to come across the street. And I'd love to tear down the big wall, but that's a whole other conversation.
Democratic primary coming up
in
June, and you are again facing Treon White,
yes, sir,
whom you beat in the special election last year to replace Marion Barry. That was a contentious race, very nearly a contested one, which you won by under 100 votes. Treon White says he's running because the ward needs an independent candidate, not a rubber stamp for Mayor Bowser's agenda. Does your record indicate that you are a rubber stamp for Mayor Bowser's agenda, in your view?
I don't think so. I think what my record shows is exactly what I committed to doing when I started to run this race, and that is that no one would outwork me, no one would work harder for the residents of Ward 8, and to bring resources and investments in Ward 8. And so we've been able to do that, from the larger investments that get media attention to those everyday investments that we make that impact the daily lives of Ward 8 residents.
To what extent do you think your record or your point of view will indicate that you are independent of Mayor Bowser? She is, after all, supporting you.
Is there any specific issue where you guys have disagreed? Not that you have to have one, but is there one?
I've been asked this. I've been interviewing for endorsement, and it's probably the most popular question that I get is where do we differ? And so I think our methods on things differ in many ways. I think probably the most obvious way on that really is the security camera program, right? Well, just my view represents the residents of Ward 8. So the security camera program being a rebate program was one that I didn't support until we were able to add a voucher program to it to make sure.
Have the money up front for businesses that need it as opposed to making
them apply
for it.
Yeah, you know, so there are a lot of residents that live in
neighborhoods. That's pretty minor on the grand scheme of things economic development. The mayor has certainly done the Wizards facility. She certainly paid more attention
to Ward 8
than a lot of people accused her of back during her own campaign for mayor.
Okay, well, you know,
and she's got the special deputy mayor for economic development.
The mayor said she was going to focus on Ward 8 and, East of the River 7 and 8. And I'm going to hold her accountable as well as the residents of Ward 8. I think the place where you'll see the separation again is going to be what we asked for as priorities in the budget and what the mayor put in her budget.
You succeeded Marion Barry in that seat. It'll take you a lot of work to have a reputation like him. But did you read the Kobe King article in the Washington Post?
Comparing Marion Barry with Donald Trump.
Donald Trump is the new Marion Barry. That infuriated a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if Kobe did it just for that reason. But what do you think about that?
Did not see the article, it was in last Saturday's edition of the Washington Post, and Kobe King was making the point that both Donald Trump and Marion Barry feel they can get away with anything.
Most Ward 8 residents that I talked to who read the article were offended to have Mr. Trump and Mr. Barry compared to each other. And I think that at its core, Mr. Barry's intentions of doing what he did or whatever he wanted to do was based on a passion and a dedication to the people he was serving.
He had demonstrable results despite all the problems he had in his personal life. I want to tell you this is when I noticed this was going to be something. When Harry Jaffe, my co-author of Dream City, and who has been one of the most severe critics of Marion Barry, was horrified at this column. And he said, we've got to respond to Kobe King. The Barry is nothing like Donald Trump. I said, well, go ahead, Harry.
I think, you know.
Their histories are completely different.
Donald Trump is self-serving. Right. And Marion Barry was selfless in what he did in his actions for disenfranchised people. I'm not sure why Mr. King wrote the article, but maybe it was to spark conversation as he's doing.
On to the telephones. Our guest is LaRubie May. She's a D.C. council member representing Ward 8, taking your calls at 800-433-8850. You can watch our live video stream at our website, kojoshow.org. Here is Hassan, who is in Southeast Washington. Hassan, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Kojo. Good morning, LaRubie May, Councilwoman.
Good afternoon, Hassan.
I just want to say I have a business there. I just want to say, Councilwoman, I'm wishing you the best. You're doing a wonderful job. We always complain. We do complain if we see something wrong, but we have to give our leadership sometimes a compliment. The hard work they're doing, and I appreciate the service you're giving us. I don't live at Ward 8. I do have a business. But I appreciate that what you have done.
What's the
so
nature
far
of your business in Ward 8?
I have a gas station there.
Okay, and what is your concern?
My concern is only safety, and I hope we will do our best. And I just want to call and say and thank you, and we will support you. And that's all. So another thing is, I want to ask you, Kojo. I want to see you. I have lived in D.C. for 8 years. I can't wait to see Tom Sherwood running office in Washington.
you'll be maybe waiting another 30 years or so. We're not sure about that yet. He's been encouraged to do this before. You wouldn't.
You know, I did when Mayor Barry suggested that the near southwest section over there on Arena Stage would be added to Ward 8 to bring economic development to Ward 8. I said, well, that's great. I live there. I can run against you in the next election. And there was this pregnant pause, and he said, I can't wait.
I would love to see that forum.
Yes, that would be terrific.
Crime is on a lot of people's minds, including Hassan, these days. Homicides are up district-wide 15% since last year. Ward 8 seeing more than its share of that violence, including a shooting earlier this month in broad daylight on Alabama Avenue that left one person dead. But I'd like you to respond to a more specific question. What do you think of your colleague Kenyon McDuffie's plan to pay likely offenders to stay out of trouble?
So, you know, that's a topic of discussion that I have across the ward right now, for people saying, like, oh, you know, either they support it or they don't support it. And so I
do
think
they understand it.
So many of them
it's
don't.
Not that easy to understand.
Right, many of them don't. And, you know, we're definitely looking. Councilmember McDovey looked at, I believe, it was the California model to see how it
Richmond, California.
That we do it. And so what it is we've got to figure out a way in which we are more better able to prevent crime. And we've got to look at some of our residents who have committed crimes and how it is that we kind of keep them. And so for me, really look at it is not that we're paying you not to commit crimes. We're putting you in a program to get you on a pathway that leads you to a different trajectory outside of crime. And so you can, you know, boil it down and say we're paying you not to commit crime. But at its core, we're trying to strengthen you and give you the capacity to be able to provide for yourself and your family outside of criminal activity.
Mr. McDuffie couldn't say it better himself. So
no, he didn't say it. He should have said it better. This is not just to pay people to sit at home and put their feet up and be paid not to commit crimes. I would remind for people who are a little bit older, they might remember something called the Roving Leaders Program that used to be run through the recreation department.
Yep.
And they would go into the communities and get guys who were from those communities, hire them, and they would spend their time being ambassadors in throughout the community, checking in on people, seeing if there's a truant on the corner, checking on the person. People of their own community making sense of a neighborhood where there's not nearly enough attention. And this program, people who would sign up to be paid would in fact be doing programs or other kinds of things. They would not just being paid not to commit crimes. I just find the way the story is presented in the media is just really inadequate and offensive.
And unfair. And I think, well, there you go. And one of the things that we minimize is that there is a population definitely in Ward 8 that understand that they did bad things in their neighborhood and they want an opportunity to come back and do good things in their neighborhoods. And so this just really gives them that opportunity and while at the same time teaching them a transferable skill so that we get them, again, on a different trajectory of being able to take care of themselves and take care of their families.
I understand there's some community efforts as well, including one called Man on the Block.
Oh, man, yes.
Could you explain what that is?
So I had the privilege with Dr. Clark and the Richard Wright Public Charter School to participate in a program called Man the Block. And in essence, Man the Block is about safe passages, making sure that our young people have a safe passage to school. And so I'm proud that in Ward 8, we're going to participate in a district-wide Man the Block program on May 15th. So we encourage anyone who wants to participate in Ward 8 with us to call my office, 724-8045, if you want to participate. And we have a couple of schools where we know that there's some safe passage issues with our young people getting to and from school. And so Man the Block program not only literally mans the block for our kids to get safely to metros, but they actually have people that will get on the metro bus as well. And again, it's about making sure that our children are getting home safely.
Running out of time very quickly, but Deborah in Washington, D.C., you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hello, and thank you for taking the question. There is some talk around D.C. that the mayor has requested that her staff push donations or push her staff to have others donate to the council members' campaign now. I just wanted to know if that is an unofficial endorsement by the mayor.
So I think you would have to ask the mayor whether or not she, you know, unofficially endorses that. I don't think that the mayor's been silent on her support for me. I mean, she's been pretty public saying that she supported me. She supported me from the beginning. I'm very grateful for her support. I don't know that she is encouraging her staff members to do any fundraising. This is the first time I'm ever hearing that, ma'am. I really don't believe that would be something that the mayor would do.
I haven't heard that either. Yeah. If the mayor is in any official government meeting where she is and she said anything about telling people to support LaRubie May, I'd like to know it for a story. But I have not heard that at all.
It'd be a violation of the Hatch Act. I mean, the mayor can do things herself.
She does support you. There's no doubt about that.
There's no, and I'm grateful for her support. And she can do things. But she, you know, again, I've never, ever heard anyone say that she's done anything to coerce or to her staff.
One quick question?
Metro.
It's because of his horrible April Fool's joke.
It was a great joke.
The Green Line is very important for people trying to get to it, plus the bus service. This week there was discussion that Metro may, in fact, have to shut down some sections for months at a time in order to really do the working. And I'm just in the Washington Post today. had an editorial kind of complaining about it, although a year ago they had an editorial saying they have got to take bold decisions to fix Metro. Where are you on the idea that Metro may have to shut down parts of the various lines to get the work done rather than stringing it out over many years?
So I understand that, the new chairman, Mr. Evans, my colleague, has been really good at helping to understand what the issues are, helping me understand what the issues are, and that the decisions that they need to make are extreme, but we need them in order to make the extreme changes that we have. But, what I would say about the bold or this change about shutting it down, I think the proposed maybe is like the blue line potentially for like a month or a couple of months, that we just have a plan in place to make sure that specifically we're residents have an opportunity to get back and forth to work in a very efficient way. What I would say about WMATA generally, not that you asked, but I have the mic now, is I would like for WMATA to make a very bold decision and to find a way to get out of the contract to convey the Congress Heights Metro to the development group that would potentially displace the residents at 1309 and 1310 Alabama Avenue. That's the bold decision that I would like to see WMATA make.
Almost out of time, as I said several times before, but I should mention that the show is coming to Anacostia next week.
Absolutely.
We'll be broadcasting from the Anacostia Playhouse Tuesday and Wednesday. Wednesday evening, we'll host a Kodjoe in Your Community conversation with Courtney Snowden, the Deputy Mayor for Economic Opportunity, and several contributors to our Anacostia Unmapped project. I expect we'll be hearing from a lot of your constituents about what's on their minds.
Absolutely. I look forward to stopping by.
Councilmember Silverman has texted me, and she's about the breakfast, and she said she did not file the resolution for disapproval of the Wizards facility, and that she talked to you about going forward to make sure that people in the neighborhood and all are not displaced by the economic development.
She said all of that in one tweet?
Well, it's a message. It's a little bit longer than that. I'm trying to summarize it as I do in the media business.
Lou Ruby, may thank
you
so
much. She wants to make it a great investment.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Ruby Mays, a D.C. Council member representing Ward 8. We'll be talking next with Dan Bowling. He's a Democratic candidate from Maryland's 8th Congressional District. Have questions for him? Start calling now, 800-433-8850. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter with NBC4 and a columnist with the current newspapers. That cloud of smoke that you may be seeing over the White House tomorrow will not be an indication that rain is coming. It will, however, if you happen to see that cloud, be the result of what it is my understanding is a 51-foot marijuana joint that Adam Eidinger...
Fake marijuana joint. It's not going to be real.
Well, they'll be smoking something over there. They're planning to have a smokeout, and Adam Eidinger says they're going to do that unless the president agrees to have a butt summit where he, like the beer summit, invites the advocates for the legalization of marijuana over and talks to them before the event. Well, this is Friday, and no such call, I think, has come, so they'll be having their smoke out tomorrow.
Well, you're making a bit of fun of them, but this is Adam Eidinger, who's
very serious.
On the show. Very serious. More than 5 million people have been arrested for various marijuana charges in this country.
Yes.
Marijuana is a Schedule I drug. It has been since the war on drugs in the 70s, and it means that people are going to prison. And it's been for possession of marijuana. The city and other places have decriminalized marijuana. And this is what the point of this demonstration is. Now, I think it will be very interesting visually, certainly, if they have a 51-foot marijuana cigarette.
Adam is nothing if not creative.
And 51 is also a nod to the city should be the 51st state, too. So it's very complicated. If you're stoned, you won't be able to follow all these subtexts. but people should know if you want to go and support this. Some people intend to go and be arrested, but it is a crime to have marijuana on your possession on federal property, and that includes Lafayette Park and all the U.S. Park Service properties and federal buildings in the city. So do be aware, it's decriminalized in the District of Columbia, but federal property, it is still a crime. So you just be careful what you decide to do.
Joining us in studio now is Dan Bowling. He's a Democratic candidate for Maryland's 8th Congressional District. Dan Bowling, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me here.
You've never held elected office, but you have run for Congress. In 2012, you ran for Congress in Indiana. You placed 4th out of 5 candidates. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now you're running in Montgomery County, Maryland. Can you explain why the geographic switch and why you're now looking to represent Maryland's 8th District?
Well, I've lived in Montgomery County for 25 years.
You used to live in the other state.
I lived in Virginia, I lived in D.C., I lived in
Maryland. But you were living both in Maryland and Indiana at the same time, is what you seem to be saying.
No, I didn't say that at all, actually. In 2012, there was an open seat, and my family owns property in Indiana. I moved back to Indiana to run for the open seat there.
Oh, okay. So you were...
I was basically a carpetbagger.
Oh, okay.
In my hometown in Indiana.
So that in Maryland, you're not a carpetbagger.
That's
correct. This is where you actually reside. You've been in the biotechnology field in your professional life.
That's
Why
correct.
Are you running in this very competitive race for the 8th District?
In the biotech field, we actually managed to get things done for decades. And it occurs to me that if Congress were organized a little bit differently, Congress could actually get things done as well. In the past 2 years, The Atlantic and NPR and Politico have reported on a reform that has been proven now for 80 years in an obscure place, Nebraska, and it's not the unicameral. It's the fact that they told the parties, you guys set up shop across the street, do your organizing, your mobilizing, your advocating, your policy formulation over there, but we're not going to have a majority leader or a minority leader of whips. And in Nebraska in 2014, where all the members come in on equal footing, in a red state, they elected 8 of their committee chairpersons from the Democratic side of the aisle because they could vote by secret ballot. So the moderates couldn't be outed by their conservative colleagues. And you have a true nonpartisan legislature that is a model for...
That is not dysfunctional.
It is functional, highly functional.
Well, that may well or not be good or for Nebraska, but... Why do you think, even if you were elected to Congress, that you, is there a caucus of people who want to do that? I mean, this
yes,
seems to me with
say
all...
85% of Congress people do not want to be controlled by
15%. No, there's no caucus with 85% of the people there. I ask if there's a caucus or... Because...
We're going to form a caucus, yes.
Can I just ask a couple of quick questions? Are you employed now? I tried to research you. Are you employed now?
I have recently been doing pro bono work for the Montgomery County Commission on Veterans Affairs and for the David Lynch Foundation.
So you're not employed. Are you retired? You have a. You used to work for a company associated with GE. Are you retired? I couldn't figure out
who
you are.
Tom, my father.
No, I don't want to hear about your father.
Well, you're going to hear about my dad. Just one second. My father retired at 101 a year ago. So at 65, I consider myself on hiatus, not retired.
So you, at this moment, you're not employed. Is that correct?
I am very highly employed. I'm not making any money running for Congress, but I am busier than I've ever been in my life.
Dad, you brought up money because April is when candidates have to disclose how much money they've raised, how much money they've spent. This could turn out to be the most expensive House race in history, given one particular self-funded candidate, but how much have you raised?
I have raised about $10,000.
I looked at the March 10th report. I didn't see any. Is that what it was?
I wasn't required to file March 10th. I hadn't hit the $5,000 limit by that point.
Does money matter to you in this race?
Well, you can't win with no money, but here's an interesting fact. Most political consultants are paid as a percentage of their ad buys for their candidates, so they're incredibly conflicted. When the Kathleen Matthews campaign did a poll at the end of February, they put me in fourth place after my website being up for a week, ahead of 5 other candidates, and one place behind David Trone, who had spent $4 million to my $2,000, because I'm using social media.
So, well, speaking of that, I looked for your website. I couldn't find it. Dan for Congress or whatever?
No,
what is it?
It's DANTOCongress.com.
DANTOCongress.com. That's a
right
website?
There. Yes. Campaign website.
The only thing I found was your LinkedIn website.
No, you have to type dan2congress.com.
I do it right now.
Yep.
But you're all on LinkedIn. You were the first candidate I've ever seen run for office on LinkedIn.
Well, you know what? It actually worked and it was free.
Okay. That's what you mean by using social media to advance your campaign?
That's one of the tools I'm using. I'm not going to disclose for my competitors all the things we're doing on social media, but it is free and it works.
Go ahead, Tom.
I'm just astonished. I don't know if it's because of these allergy medicines that I'm taking. It's making me grumpier than normal.
No, that's who you are.
It's I'm,
You do seem a little grumpy. I've heard you so many times on this show, and you've never been quite as edgy as you seem to be right now, Tom.
Well, I'm trying to figure out who you are and what you're trying to do. Let me just, here's a local issue.
Okay.
You live over there off of River Road.
Correct.
You live near the West Barge Shopping Center.
That's right.
The council, Montgomery County Council, is going to take a vote this month, April, on that issue. What's your opinion of what should happen to West Barge where you live?
Well, of course, that's not a congressional issue, but it is a local issue, and I think that the plan to build out to the maximum allowed is too much.
Have you been active in community? What other things have you been active in to show your...
You mean in addition to the Montgomery County Commission on Veterans Affairs?
Yes, that's one.
Okay. I have been working with a group called Blind Stokers that provides bicycling experience to blind people who can ride at the back.
That's a very nice thing. Congratulations for that.
I have tutored at the Ideal Academy in D.C., not in Maryland, but in D.C.
And well, I can tell you why this Harvard law? I'm sorry. Or do you want to go?
I'm going to say why Tom is asking these questions. You have been described as an outsider in your own party.
I am absolutely correct.
Given several candidates who are known quantities, and even Tom, a reporter, is having trouble finding out who you are and information about you, why should someone vote for you in this race?
Oh, this is what's happening. When I take my card to strangers on the street and I read two things, politicians do more to foster disunity than any other figures. That's Don Baer, former high official in the Clinton White House. And the second quote, people are actually sick and tired of both parties. That's Reince Priebus, the chairman of GOP. And when I read that to people, they say, give me 50. I had one person say, give me 1,000. Because that captures the sentiment of at least 40% of the electorate.
So you want to elect a whole group, bunch of people who have no political experience in running the government? We're going to run the government by people who have no politics experience?
No, it's not necessary to elect people who have no government experience. It's just important, as President Obama said, if we want a better politics, we have to change the system.
Well, I want to find out who you are, because I know who David Trone is. I know who Kathleen Matthews is. I know who Jamie Raskin is and all the other candidates who are running.
Have you been on my website,
I'm looking
Tom?
At it right now.
There's a whole page there that says About Dan that gives my whole personal history.
I'm
have you read
trying
that
to talk
yet,
about
Tom?
It as soon as you'd let me. One of the things is it says that you several places you've mentioned Harvard Law School. And are you a lawyer?
Tom,
that's a yes or a no.
Well, if you'd read my website, you know the answer is no.
Well, the people can't see your website. But you have a certificate.
But you're a reporter. You're supposed to do your background research, Tom.
I have done it. I know the answers to
most
of my...
Why do you ask a question that's on my website?
I know most of the answers to the questions
okay.
I ask.
All right.
What is the certificate from Harvard that you have that you've promoted on here? A certificate from Harvard Law School.
Well, I don't know. I'm promoting it. I'm listing it as part of my life experience and my training. Roger Fisher, who was the author of the world-famous book Getting to Yes... he's passed away now. He used to lead a week-long intensive negotiation workshop for lawyers from around the country. I believe I was the only non-lawyer in attendance. And it basically trained in his style of negotiation.
So the Harvard Law School has given you a certificate, or did Mr.
Yes, that's correct.
Fisher give it to you?
I'm sorry? No, it's from the Harvard Law School.
Put on your headphones again, Tom. Here's Walter in Baltimore, Maryland. Walter, you're on the air. Go ahead, please. Walter, are you there? Walter, you're distracted. Walter, are you texting by any chance?
Yeah.
Walter, we'll come back to you when you start paying attention again. Your campaign slogan is Fix Congress First.
Correct.
If you are elected, how do you intend, as a freshman congressperson from the 8th District in Maryland, to fix Congress?
Well, we're going to actually start the day after the primary. I'm going to be reaching out to all 870 candidates in both parties all around the country to educate them about reforming Congress by getting the party structure out of it. And my intention is to have close to the 218 commitments that we need to have a vote to do away with the majority and minority leader and the whips. Those were created in 1899 by the Speaker by a simple rule of Congress, and they can be eliminated procedurally as easily, although, of course, there will be resistance.
Maybe people want a congressman who will help get the purple line. We just this week discovered that it's another $500 million, $600 million more expensive than what was first proposed. What do you think about the purple line and the federal funding for it?
Well, the purple line, I think, is going to happen. I know there's resistance in Chevy Chase and other quarters from it, and the governor has been a little bit slow in making an adequate commitment.
Are you for it?
Yes, I am. Absolutely.
Well, isn't getting federal funds for the Purple Line more important than trying to make a historic change in the way Congress is run?
Tom, that's an extraordinary statement. We have a dysfunctional Congress. And, you know, my analogy on my website is if you're taking your daughter to college and your car is all busted up and broken and leaking, you know, with an almost flat tire, you go to the shop and get your car operational before you courageously, heroically say, we're going to make it there with this busted-up car. You don't drive a busted-up car to take your daughter to college. You fix it. And Congress is very fixable. If you go to the Atlantic, to NPR, to Politico, you'll see this is not an idea from some guy named Dan Bowling nobody ever heard of. This is an idea that's been covered in the press that has been proven for 80 years.
This Van Hollen, whether you want him to be your senator or not, has been one of the most effective members of Congress in a dysfunctional Congress. And I think people are looking to see who's going to replace him for a lot of things that are going on in that county, not just this broad scheme idea of reforming the Congress. In your campaign, who is your treasurer?
I'm my own treasurer.
Who's your campaign manager?
I'm my own campaign manager.
So you're basically, you are the polar opposite of David Trone. He's spending almost $10 million to buy the ads, buy the campaign operation to put up the signs, and you're like 180 degrees flip side. You're not virtually doing anything except your secret social media campaign.
Well, I have a lot of
I don't understand your campaign at all.
Well, it's a little different, Tom. I'm not surprised. I don't think there's ever been a campaign like mine.
Here is Walter. He's back in Baltimore.
Hello.
Very good.
Walter, are you paying attention this time?
I was paying attention before. I didn't hear you, but I thank you for taking my call.
You're
I just want to ask your guest if he could comment on the redistricting that's going on in the state of Maryland right now, the attempt by Hogan to gerrymander Maryland as it's been gerrymandered by other Republican governors. Would you please speak to that? Because that's not just a state issue. That's a national issue, as the Post editorial commented on last week sometime. But if you are successful in achieving that seat, as Kojo just asked you, how can you deal with an insolence of the Republican Party?
Well, I agree that gerrymandering ought to be a crime. It probably violates the Constitution. It amounts to the theft of people's votes by other elected officials. But you have one fact wrong. I'm a Democrat. It's the Democrats who made Maryland the most gerrymandered state in the nation. Governor Hogan did a redistricting commission, which I'm told by members of the Maryland Senate is a non-serious effort that allows legislators to pretend that they're trying to end gerrymandering, but I was assured that that will go nowhere. Representative John Delaney in the Maryland 6th has a bill called Open Our Government Act, which will do away with gerrymandering nationwide and will make primaries open to all voters, independents, unaffiliated, Republicans, and Democrats.
People in this country are hurting. We've had income stagnation, no wage growth for decades. What is your position on the federal minimum wage?
Well,
what is the federal minimum wage?
The federal minimum wage is around $9 something.
No, it's not. It's $7.25. It hasn't been raised since 2008 or 2009.
Tom,
what do you
that
think?
Was a good gotcha. You got
it wasn't,
me.
I'm not gotcha. You know, what do you think it should be?
Well, I think $15 is what it should be at a very minimum. But
at a minimum?
But I don't think that we have to do it through that one mechanism. I think that the earned income tax credit is another alternative that may be more palatable to Republicans. And if we need Republican support, we shouldn't be hung up on the precise mechanism for increasing people's wages. We ought to be willing to look at different mechanisms that we can get broader bipartisan support on. But, you know, Nick Hanauer is my favorite billionaire. He's on my website. He makes the point that it's not rich people who create jobs. It's the middle class. And that people's employees need to be able to be their customers.
Right, that's allow
me introduce Kim in Sterling, Virginia. Kim, consider yourself introduced. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just listening and hearing, you know, it sounded like some negativity toward the person running I didn't really catch his name, but he's
Dan.
Running without,
Dan Bowling.
Political experience. And I was thinking how everyone wants to change things, and if we're not open to people with different credentials, how can we ever expect to affect change.
I think we are open to people with different credentials, but we question everyone who is running for office as to whether or not they are, in fact, qualified to run for office on the basis of their experiences. That's what these questions are about.
And it's not questioning what the qualifications are. I just want to know what they are. That's why that you hear the frustration in my voice is because, again, you have a one-man band campaign.
No, I have many volunteers as well.
Well, and you said you had secret social media. You know, social media is easy
secret,
to try.
Tom, you're using these words to spin this in a strange way. I didn't say secret.
Yes, you did.
We'll review the tape.
Okay, good. If you didn't, I apologize.
I said I'm not going to share it with my opponents on the air. I'm doing it.
So maybe I interpreted not sharing it meaning secret.
I'll share it with you.
Well, go ahead.
Off the air.
Well, no, this is one that we can reveal because the primary is on April 26th, and because Maryland has a closed primary system, only Democrats can vote, you have a suggestion for independent and unaffiliated voters frustrated with the gerrymandering that keeps one party in power to temporarily change their voter registration to Democratic for the primary.
Thank you, Gojo. That's absolutely correct.
Is that your strategy to try to win in this race?
You know, independent voters' taxes help pay for the cost of conducting elections. And the Republican and Democratic Party have rigged the system so independents are prevented from exercising their right to vote in the primaries. So I went to the Montgomery County Board of Elections and
found
a procedure. If you go to my website, look under independents and unaffiliated voters, there is a procedure as long as you act by April 5th by which you can vote.
Dan Bowling is a Democratic candidate for Maryland's 8th Congressional District. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter with NBC4 and a columnist with the Current newspapers. That's it for the show today, but remember, we've got lots going on off-air as well tonight, this very evening. Kojo Show producer Ruth Tam will be at Politics and Prose, the original location on Connecticut Avenue, for a WAMU in your bookstore event with author Heidi Julovitz starting at 7 p.m. Don't let the rain keep you away. It's going to be great. And if you're looking for weekend plans, head to our website and check out our Off the Beaten Path segments, which highlight some of the region's gems located away from the mall and tourist throngs. While you're on our website, check out our blog as well. Remember, too, you can keep up with us on Twitter. We're at Kojo Show and on Facebook. Enjoy the weekend and be sure to meet us back here Monday at noon. Catcalls were once considered an inescapable part of city life, but now the district is taking on street harassment and using public art projects to do so. We will learn more. And D.C. requires new housing development to include a portion of affordable units, but advocates say there are too few units within reach of the city's working poor. That's all coming up on Monday. What are your plans for the weekend, Tom? You plan on attending the big smoke?
I'm going on yet another week of vacation.
Oh, are you leaving town?
I don't know yet. I like my city. I like to staycation.
Make it a staycation and find yourself back here next Friday. Thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nnamdi.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Nnamdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.